This is a Glass Box Media Podcast.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to This Week in Travel, the show that talks to some of the most interesting and notable travelers in the world. Learn about the top travel stories from the world of travel, get valuable travel tips, and have some fun in the process. Now here are your hosts, Gary Arndt and Jen Leo.
This week's episode is sponsored by Expedia's Out Travel the System podcast. I'm going to take you a minute to tell you about a podcast we think you'll really like, Out Travel the System. The podcast draws on the deep foundations of travel data provided by Expedia to provide insight on overall travel trends and to show you how to save big on your next trip. That can mean anything from what time of the week or year to book your stay to staying ahead of popular trends. You know, we pride ourselves on being able to give you the inside scoop on what's going on right now in the world of travel, and that's why we think you might enjoy listening to the show. OutTravel the System also specializes in exploring what we love most about travel, from how it benefits us or the economy, to living vicariously through people who've had experiences you may never have dreamed of, like camping in the middle of an African forest. Get all of this and more by finding OutTravel the System on your favorite podcast player. Like and subscribe to get the newest episode right when they come out. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of This Week in Travel. My name is Gary Arndt, coming to you from Wisconsin. With me again, as usual, the co-host with the most, Jen Leo. How are you doing, Jen?
Hi, Gary. I'm doing great. Another sunny day in Southern California.
It's been strangely overcast here, but like it hasn't rained. I think we're getting all of the ash from the West Coast. It's just kind of flying over us.
We have overcast mornings, but it usually burns off by this time of the day.
No, we're getting like air quality advisories and stuff. And I think it's there's no fires here or anything, but it's all stuff that's blowing like from the west. And
oh, really?
Pretty far away from that. But it's getting all the way here. But speaking of far away from stuff, our guest today is coming to us from New Zealand, all the way down under. She is the woman behind the website and the YouTube channel, Growing Up Without Borders. Her and her family have been traveling around the world, been to over 100 countries. Please welcome Chantel Patton. How are you doing, Chantel?
Hey, I'm doing great. And I've got Chloe here, who's our youngest, our 13-year-old. She's joining in us with us today.
Hi, Chloe. I'm so glad you made it. Thank you for making time.
Of course.
And where exactly in New Zealand are you?
We are on the very north of the South Island of New Zealand. And speaking of weather, we've got a beautiful clear day, but we are in winter. So it is like 30 degrees outside right now.
So is that around Abel-Tasman National Park?
It is. It is. We're not too far from there. We have what they call the Queen Charlotte Walk, which is one of the great walks, literally just outside our door, pretty much. So it's absolutely beautiful.
I've been there. Yeah.
I know.
I remember taking the ferry across in my camper van, and I basically spent 2 weeks running around New Zealand. One of the places I visited. So how long have you been in New Zealand?
Oh my gosh, we have been so lucky. We're still pinching ourselves because we arrived just before the pandemic and the national worldwide lockdown. And we've been here ever since, if you can imagine. It's been crazy.
So you've been there over a year?
Over a year. We've been here over a year and a half now.
That must be a long time for you.
It's the longest we've stayed. Yeah. What's it like for you, Chloe? We're so used to moving around all the time. But what's it like for you here?
Well, it's definitely really nice to be in like one spot for like over a year because we're always moving around, visiting new places. But being here in New Zealand has been really nice because it's been COVID-free and hasn't been any kind of masks or mandatory like isolation or things like that.
Yeah, their borders have been completely closed. Shut down and closed. So if you are not already here, you can't get in unless you're a very much needed professional or maybe an actor or something like that. So we feel really lucky to be in this. We call it like almost like an isolated island from the world with, you know, sharing it with like 5 million other people. That's what it feels like.
I suppose there are worse places to get stuck during the pandemic than New Zealand.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're just, yeah, like I said, we're just pinching ourselves that we're still here, because normally, like yourself, you would come for a 2-week trip, you would see most of the highlights, and then you would leave. And that was our plan originally too, is, you know, to come for 4 weeks and then we were going to head on. And of course, you know, COVID hit, but it's been amazing because we spent one whole year here moving every week from one home to another so we can really discover the whole country. And I feel like we've seen pretty much the whole country of New Zealand, which is amazing.
So why don't you start out by telling everyone kind of the origin story? How did your family start doing this? Because we've had other families on the show that have traveled as a family. Your trip seems to be much more extensive than what a lot of people have done in terms of the places you've been, the number of places you've been. So how did this all get started?
It all started, to be honest, with reading Timothy Ferris's book, The 4-Hour Workweek, which sounds so silly, but it was a catalytic moment in our lives where we thought, oh my gosh, we don't have to stay where we are. We can leave. We can work remote. And so we started, my daughter, Chloe here, who's with us, she was only 4 weeks old and we were in Canada in the freezing cold, being traumatized by snowstorms. And we were like, let's just get out of here. We had poor internet, if you can imagine. So we were running an online business with horrible internet in the middle of nowhere. And we're like, let's just leave. So we went to Florida. She was 4 weeks old. We got authority. I guess we had to sign off papers that, you know, we were taking our baby away and whatever. So we left. And that kind of sparked that desire in us to travel and just to live in different places. But we really weren't too adventurous. We were just going back and forth to the States, essentially, for the first few years. And then when Chloe was 5, we have 3 kids. So Angelique was 7 and Julia was 9. We decided to go to Europe, which was essentially just going to be a 5-week trip, right? So it was an innocent little trip to Europe. And we were coming back to Florida after that. But what happened when we were there, I had a friend who was like, oh, you know, you guys should stay at my house for a month. I'll go to Florida for a month and we'll do this like home exchange. And, you know, this is going to be great. So we extended 5 weeks to be 3 months so that we could do this home exchange with her and see a few other places. And then after 3 months, you could say we were hooked, right? We were like, why live in the U.S. or just Canada when we can be living in other countries, right? So we started figuring out how can we live there and make this our home. And then from there, kind of hop around, you know, being in Europe, you're very central to many countries, as you know, and it's so easy to just hop, skip and jump around. There was things like the language barrier, our time zone difference for work and different things like that, that we had to overcome, if you will. But I have citizenship with Switzerland and Canada. So it was an easy fit for us to be like, right, we'll base ourselves here. We'll throw our kids into the French school system, see how it works for them. And it worked. So we started doing that and we did these little trips. So we would take them out of school for these extensive periods of a month, 4 months, another 2 months here. And so we did that on and off for 2 years. But the school system, specifically in Switzerland, how was it, Chloe? What did they tell us?
It was an amazing school because it's very different than your typical school because they literally will give you everything you need for the school year. It's not like, you know, back to school where you go shopping and buy everything. They have it all there for you, which we were shocked about. And we learned French there. And we also got to see like so many cool places.
It was amazing. Yeah. But the director of the school is like, you can't take your kids out of school anymore. I mean, we were doing things where we would tell them we had to leave for a work contract to Southeast Asia and we would be gone for like 2 months. And at first he was game to play the game with us. He was like, all right, how are we going to figure this out? And he was literally like scratching his head. Okay, you guys have to have a physical, you know, office that you're going to. All right, so let's pick a hotel. All right, we're going to live at this place. And, you know, and so he was all for it because in their school system, the director can't give you authority to leave. It has to go through kind of like the head state or whatever it is. Head, yeah. And so after a while, they're like, no, this is not working out. You know, because when we went on a trip to Southern Africa, and we thought we'd be gone for a month, and then it turned into 4 months. Anyway, so they were like, no, you can't take your kids out of school anymore. This is not good. So we were forced into homeschooling, which was, in a sense, amazing, because now all of a sudden we became completely free from any system, you know, work system, school system, you know, anything that kind of grounds you. And for our family, I guess it could be a good thing, but it could be a bad thing too, because then now we just keep going and we just keep going and going and going. And so that's how it all kind of started, if you will.
How did you, how do you have Swiss citizenship? Is it, were you born there, your parents?
Yeah, my dad is Swiss. And interestingly enough, in Switzerland, it wasn't until a few years ago that I would be able to pass down my citizenship to the kids. So over there, if you're born in Switzerland, you're not Swiss. And unlike most other countries where you're born there, you're automatically a citizen. It doesn't work that way. It only goes through being there. If you are born there, you have like a C permit, which allows you to be a resident, but you're not a national, you don't have Swiss nationality unless you get naturalized, it's called. And so anyway, so I had it through my dad's line. My dad was born and raised there and moved to Canada to learn English and then met my mom. And so that's their story. But when we were going at first, like a few years back when my girls were born, it was questionable whether or not they would be able to get citizenship. It was only given through the man, like the father, basically. And so that changed. So interestingly enough, now my girls all have Swiss citizenship as well, which is pretty awesome.
That's not a bad passport to have.
No. So then the big question is like Switzerland, though. I mean, it's beautiful, but it's like one of the most expensive countries in the world. And we always like, you know, toil with it. Like we always say it's cheaper for us to live out in other countries than living home, basically, which is crazy.
Hey, Chloe, tell me about how school works on the road.
Ooh.
Okay, so the way it works is we use an online curriculum, which basically they have an online version and an offline version. And for example, when you're going through Africa, you can't really always access internet. So we did the offline version some parts there. And when you do it, basically you have math, you have your language, you have every subject, and you read through it, you answer some questions, and it's really easy because we're not traveling around with a whole bunch of textbooks as you normally would have to do. So it works a lot better.
The program we chose as well, it's from the US actually, and it auto schedules everything for you. So and it auto grades it. So from a mom's perspective, it's a lot, you know, easier to choose a curriculum like that versus a book that you would have to divide into chapters and make sure, you know, you're doing X amount per day. This schedules the whole thing. So they log in and on Monday they see, all right, I have to do this. And then they just kind of follow their system. The downfall, though, is they don't have a teacher that's available to them, you know, to answer questions. Like the teacher is the internet, it's mom, and mom only has a certain amount of like certain mathematical skills when it comes to like calculus and stuff.
Right. So What's it called?
It's called Monarch. It's AOP is the head company because they have other curriculums. But Monarch is the online, Switched On Schoolhouse is the offline. And we are just in the process of looking at another online school, which is so exciting for us, where they would have access to top-notch teachers. It's an online high school around the world.
That started here in New Zealand, yeah. You can imagine. They've been doing it for over 8 years now, and it's basically it's access for anybody. They want everybody to be able to use it.
Yeah, their goal behind it, it's called Crimson Global Academy. It started as a tutoring site, and their goal is to have every kid basically in the world have access to education no matter what their economical, geographical, or, you know, situation basically. And so it's pretty amazing because their goal initially is to help kids get into Harvard, Ivy League, like really high-end universities, you know, in different countries. And so they have a classroom size that's quite small with really good professional teachers that are teaching, you know, through Zoom classes, essentially, I think. And so anyway, we're just in the debut stage. We're just, the girls just did their testing yesterday to see their level. You know, they teach based on level, not based on age and grade. So it's very, it's a very unique school.
Fascinating. What do you do for PE?
Ooh, what do we do? We do so much extracurricular activities. It's very different than you would have in your school, like your sports teams and stuff like that. Is that what you're saying, PE?
Yeah, well, so my daughter did online school last year for the pandemic, and it was interesting because they still had to do a little bit of PE. So she took up roller skating. That was one of the things she did. So I was just wondering, what do you do for PE while you're on the road? Do you bring a ball? Do you bring rackets? What do you do? Does your school not make you do any?
So definitely school doesn't have that in the curriculum, but mom does. And so we are super active people, but when it comes to traveling, we don't carry things with us. We go very minimalist everywhere we go just to make it easier on us. But when we're in a certain location, you know, we have access to YouTube. So we do a lot of the online, there's like kind of like jazz dance classes online on YouTube, and we do like these fitness classes. And then whenever we're somewhere locally for, you know, a few weeks at a time, I always look up different programs for the kids. So like, what were you doing last night, Chloe?
Last night we were doing dance class, for example, here in New Zealand, it's a very mountainous country, so we'll always be hiking, and they have so many cool tracks to do, which is really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, for example, sports and stuff like that, like teams, it's not like you guys have certain things, but they do, like, sometimes they'll go play at the park and play, like, tag frisbee, or I don't know what you guys call it, but like that frisbee game you're playing. So or volleyball. Yeah, it just depends. Like, certain countries will be more horseback riding, or like when they were in southern Spain, they took up flamenco classes, which was really cool. So yeah, and I know with the pandemic, everything was shut down, right? So everyone had to do with what they could. But yeah, we definitely try and do a lot more kind of outdoor hiking type of PE class things.
That sounds great. Idyllic.
Yeah.
How much like of your day
in Nicaragua? Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, in Nicaragua, it was surfing every single day. That was our PE.
Yeah, nice. I would assume getting out and being active is easy to do when you're traveling. You're going to be walking, if nothing else, quite a bit, and hiking and doing other stuff. How much of your day is actually spent studying and doing school stuff?
It varies when we are moving around and discovering different countries. Like, sometimes we'll travel slow, and other times we actually travel quite fast, depending on, you know, if we like it or we don't like it, or, you know, we're just trying to see it just to see it, or, you know, different scenarios. And so when we're in a destination, maybe just for a few days, oftentimes we're actually filming, and the girls are in kind of production mode, and they know that. So school gets put to the side, and we're more so learning, in those cases, a different way of learning. We're not doing just maths and English. We're doing geography, history, culture, language, food tasting, you know, different things like that are also school. Negotiation with taxi drivers. I mean, negotiating at the markets. We always play the games when we're at the markets, and we try and negotiate just to learn those type of skills. And the girls are getting really good at it. So it's a different type of school, but on a traditional day, you could say, when you're at home or not moving around, how many hours do you spend?
Well, I try to finish it usually in a couple hours. It doesn't really take me that much time, but my sisters, for example, they might take an extra hour because they're doing harder subjects, you could say, right now. So usually it takes about 3 hours at the most. Not actually that long.
And how old are your other kids?
So Chloe's 13, who's with me, and then Angelique is turning 16 in September, and then Julia is 17.
So you're getting close to that age where they're probably going to start going to school at some point, I'm guessing, off to college.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
I know.
What are the plans going to be for when that happens?
I know. I don't want to think about it, because this whole COVID thing threw us for a loop, right? As a goal, we were trying to get to every country in the world, and we still are. Although with Julia, she's going to be going to post-secondary really soon. And she's looking at doing potentially hotel management schools, which could be in different areas. So it's a big question, like, is she going to be left behind and we're going to continue without her, you know? But that's the way it's kind of, we're leaning towards that, you know what I mean? Unless she takes another year off and the world is fully opened up again. We're just trying to figure all that out. So yeah, that and boyfriends, like we're getting to the age where, you know, boys are starting to show up at our house, you know?
Wait a second. That's only because you're staying put though, right?
That's right. That's the theory. You just move around enough and they can't have boyfriends. Like, I mean, it's.
But in general, how do you maintain friendships?
Ooh, how do you maintain friendships, Chloe?
Well, now with online, you can basically contact them whenever you want, whether you're in, I don't know, let's say in Spain or New Zealand, you can be able to contact them. Although sometimes it's a little difficult with the time zone difference because they'll be maybe in bed and you'll be just waking up, you know what I mean? But overall, it's pretty easy with online social media.
Mm-hmm. It's not the same, right?
I mean, it's not the same as meeting them in person, but you can still contact them and see how they're doing.
Yeah.
And where are your friends located? I mean, are they just sort of scattered all over the world at this point?
Yeah, you could say so. It's like we have friends everywhere, especially here in New Zealand now. We've made so many friends just being here for so long that when we'll leave, it'll be like, oh, I'll miss you guys. You know what I mean?
This is something that I've had to deal with because I've traveled a lot. I've been to a lot of places. And after doing it for a long time, that kind of becomes your life. And when you start talking to someone, there's a tendency to tell some sort of story of something that happened to you in some place you visited. And you start coming off as really pretentious. You don't necessarily mean to do it. But I actually wrote an article about it called Pretentious Travel Douchebag Syndrome. And I was wondering if you guys have ever encountered it because, you know, after you've been to all these places and you've lived this way and now you're in one spot, you're dealing with people who probably are not as well traveled as you. And it's very easy to do. Have you ever been in a situation where that's happened?
I've noticed that from my girls' perspective. So for me, I just don't talk about travel with a lot of people because there's just no, I don't want to say common grounds, but they just don't relate. And here's what's amazing. In New Zealand specifically, people are quite adventurous. And somehow I think because a lot of the homes we stayed in have been through a website called Home Exchange, we talk to a lot of travelers. And so I haven't personally experienced too much of that, but I know exactly what you're saying because anytime we go back home or, you know, we're talking to people who haven't traveled, I just try not to talk about it, if you will. I just try and find different subjects to talk about. But our girls the other day, there was a little neighbor over and they were talking about all these places they've been and this and that and that and that and this and that. And I was like, girls, you sound like so spoiled. Like, do you realize what you sound like? And I don't think they realize it. And so I can see how that could come across as like, you little spoiled brats, you know, you've been to all these places, you've done all these things, you know? So yeah, I see that.
How has it been just socially, you know, traveling? Because, you know, when a normal family, they're at home, you go to work, you pick up the kids, there's kind of a routine a lot of people have. And I assume that's just all out the window. So how do you guys handle just dealing with each other all the time?
Ooh, Chloe, do you want to say something? She's looking at me. Okay. For me, well, two things on that. One is I feel like we have more of a structured family than a lot of families, like, which is bizarre, even though we're moving around and doing this and that, because we're together all the time, we actually sit and have meals all the time, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know, and that's normal for us to sit around a table. And you wouldn't believe how many kids, like a lot of kids just show up and we end up feeding them. But they'll be like, oh, I haven't sat at a table for dinner with my family in like forever. And I'm like, what? Like, that is so bizarre. And so that aspect of family and traditional, like most families, you're so involved with sports and this and that, the parents are working both two different jobs, different shifts, and they come home and then they're running this kid there, that kid, like there's no time for family time, you know what I mean? And So that is different in our aspect, but the fact that we're always together 24/7 is taxing as well, right? I mean, there's the issue of, oh my gosh, I some people, well, just look at the pandemic during lockdowns, people had to be together 24/7 and they're not used to it, right? I think we've, as a family, had so many years of doing that, that it was just normal for us. And we've gotten over a lot of issues that people would first have in the beginning, like, I need my own space, or I need my girlfriend time, or I need my, you know, whatever, my Zen time, or whatever you want to call it, right? So there's different things. Like, I mean, when we're traveling nonstop, it's also stressful in the sense that you're just go, 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 checking in, checking out. There's all these added stresses that you don't have on a typical traditional day where you have your coffee and you're off to your job or whatever. So certain things, like I've found myself doing when you get to your cracking point, is like, okay, kids and husband, you guys walk on that side of the road and don't you dare cross the street. I need my own thinking space, you know, because just having your own time to think sometimes. So things like that. But those are like those breakdown moments where you're like, I just need my own space, you know. But yeah, it's been pretty good. What about you, Chloe? How do you find it?
I mean, for me personally, it hasn't really ever bothered me being around my family, because I like being around a crowd of people all the time. I'm not really like wanting to have my own space. So
give it a few years, Chloe. Trust me.
I'm shocked, Chloe. Are you putting on a brave face because we're on a podcast? Tell the truth. Don't you need? You have two sisters. How do you? You have to have your own alone time some of the time.
Well,
no,
not really. I mean, I don't ever really fight with my sisters. Surprisingly, like, we really get along.
It's, that is,
some people are just like, how do you get along? But we get along really well, if you can imagine. We don't ever fight.
I can dream about that. I can dream about that. What is your mode of transportation?
Ooh, that's a good question. It depends on where we are. A lot of times, well, in certain countries, there is no rental cars, for example. Like in Malawi, we just took the chicken buses or whatever you call them. And then in other countries, we'll rent a vehicle and we'll just, you know, go by car. Other places we just take the local transportation, tuk-tuks, yeah, like just whatever the locals do is what we typically do.
Motorcycles,
all three of us on one motorcycle. Yeah, we literally just do what the locals do. Like literally, if that's what the locals do, that's what we usually do. Like we don't really, you know, I mean, but we do travel all different ways. We've even experienced a private jet before, which is really cool. So I could say we travel every single different way, but it just depends. Like in New Zealand, for example, you can't get around without a vehicle of your own. It's like the US or Canada. I mean, you have to have a vehicle. So then we ended up renting for the first few months. And now we have actually a friend who loaned us their vehicle, which is amazing. After like, I think 8 months of renting a car, because we didn't think we were going to be here this long. But yeah, it just depends, you know, depends on where we are.
So on your website, I was super impressed to see that you've started a business in addition to all of your, travel vlogging and blogging, Geography Made Fun. Learn geography from a kid's perspective. Can you tell us a little bit about this? What's your class like?
Oh my gosh, this is so exciting, because our girls can literally kick my butt when it comes to like geography and certain things. And I can see that every time we go places, they were learning themselves so that they can share in our videos and stuff like that. And so this came about because we want our travel to essentially fund what we do. And so this was a perfect match for kids who are, you know, bored in school, reading a textbook and not really, I don't know, enjoying their geography class.
Just gives them a different perspective of the world, not just seeing it in a book, but in real life, seeing what the culture is like, what the food is like, what languages they speak, what the money looks like. It's just, until you actually see it, you're like, wow, it's amazing.
And the girls, so we have them talking about it from their perspective, meaning they really are teaching from what they experienced, which means it might not be fully 100% accurate in certain scenarios, because they're really talking about what they experienced there, what the food was like for them there, what the mountains looked like there, or the trees or whatever, the vegetation. And then we show video clips alongside with them talking. And so it's one video a month that people get, and it's a $5 class per month. So it's pretty cool.
Now, do the kids get to keep the money?
we get to split it. There's not all that much money right now coming in from it, but yeah, we're working on that. And it's going to be a split, eh, girls? It's basically your business.
Well, let's try and help promote it to our listeners. And I'm sure some of our listeners have kids of their own. Chloe, what are some of the geography lessons that you've done recently? And do you know what the next location is going to be going forward for August?
For us, currently, we've done Sri Lanka, we've done the Maldives, we've done Mexico, we've done a few. And this month, we are going to be posting New Zealand, which is really exciting because we've been here for so long. So it's going to give us, we know so much about New Zealand so far. And done with
Switzerland. Done Nicaragua, did you say?
No, I didn't say Nicaragua.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens if we were to join today? Do we get to see the archive or only get to see the new ones?
Oh, the way it's set up is you start from the very first one that we produced, and then every month you get access to a new one. So it emails you when the new one is out. So it's based on when you sign up. So you'll get it in order from the order that they've been working on them. And they're the ones doing most of the work too, like the production of it, the layout of it, finding all the clips that go with it. Like Chloe's heavily involved in doing all that. So
I think this is terrific. I'm a big fan of kidpreneur projects and ideas. Who does all the video editing? Video editing takes so much time. Who does that for your family on your Growing Up Without Borders channel?
You know it. So Julia and Angelique and myself do pretty much all the productions. So right now, for example, I have a list right in front of me. We've got about 20 videos. And so each week, one of us is working on a different video. They do the pre-production. Tyler goes through and fine-tooth combs the different things, little things like, because we're starting to get better. I mean, we were horrible in the beginning, but now we're looking at things like, oh, the audio needs to be adjusted here. And, oh, there's a little whatever here, or, you know, so that's it. We pick out all the different songs, and Chloe's more involved with the geography production of finding all the clips and putting that together and doing the little cuts on those ones. So yeah, it's a family business.
Have you been able to get vaccines in New Zealand?
Oh, great question. They're actually quite behind compared to a lot of countries, probably because they haven't had to like urgently worry about it. And I think so they locked down their borders. If you don't know this, you know, I'm sure you do because you've traveled everywhere, but they locked down their borders so fast and so strict. And it was such a proper lockdown that it literally eliminated COVID from getting in.
And I
and
also
staying.
Think they did this because, for example, where we are, like, we visited this one town called Blenheim, and they only have 2 ICU beds for, like, having a large amount of old people living in that area. So it wouldn't be basically the best of spots to get, you know, COVID there.
I mean, if they had a breakout, they wouldn't be prepared. They wouldn't be able to handle COVIDs and that amount of ICU beds. So they did a good job in saying, right, we're just going to properly lock down the country. You still, every time people come in or come back home, they have to do a 2-week quarantine in their hotels, right, in their managed facilities. And it's been their saving grace. So they haven't had to roll out the vaccines really fast because they haven't had any problems with COVID, you could say. But it's coming. So now I think it's the 60-some-year-olds that are all getting it. And it's going to be anyone in the country will have access to it. So it's going to be coming soon for everyone else. So, yep.
Excellent.
I'm scrolling through your YouTube channel. You have so many videos and so many destinations that I wouldn't even begin to know how to pronounce. Chloe and Chantal, can you tell me a couple countries, even if they're very remote or obscure, give us a couple, 2 or 3 locations that you thought were exceptionally family friendly, but you were surprised by that. Like you would have never thought to have gone there until you got there and you were like, wow, this is a great place for families.
I always say the same thing, but I'm going to say it again just because it really was a unique experience for our family. And that was in a place called San Juan del Sur in Nicaragua. And I think the reason why is because it was one of these countries that had a political problem, major problems right before we went. And so in my mind, I was thinking, this is so dangerous. This is going to be awful. Like, we're just going to like really pass through and get the heck out of there. But we ended up spending 9 weeks and we met the most amazing families that were off the beaten track type of travelers that all had similar stories. You know, you could share and relate. It was just such a different, unique atmosphere. And because there was no tourists there, because everyone was so scared to go, we had the whole place to ourselves. And it was just such a unique and beautiful scenario. I don't know that it'd be the same for people going now if it's so busy with everyone and, you know, tourists, but we really had a unique experience there. We didn't have a vehicle. We were jumping in the back of pickup trucks to get here and there. We were shopping at local markets in the fish market to get food. You know, there was no big grocery store. It was just such a different, unique experience and probably the most shocking because of what my expectation was and also, then what it was.
When we were there, there was a place called Tree Casa, which is basically like, I guess you could say it's like a lodge or... Yeah, lodge. And it had like this really cool waterfall and it had a water slide. So it was a really neat spot to go because on Wednesdays they had like pizza and it was only like $10. So it was really cool.
And everyone knew about it. So it was like all the locals went to hang out there on Wednesday afternoon. It was pizza at Tree Casa.
Chloe, do you have any tips for other kids out there who are traveling on how to meet locals? Like other local kids, do you have any like sort of starter conversation sentences that work well for you? Like how do you approach kids and how do you just start up playing or chatting?
Usually I try to find the best moment to go up and just be like, hi, and then just kind of like start a conversation and just say, I don't know, ask them how they're doing. Tell them basically, trying to think of the best like topics.
Well, often I find like when you guys were younger, it often sounded like us as parents, we would just let the kids do all the introductions for us, but they'd be like, oh, hey, do you want to come play with this and whatever? And then all of a sudden we'd have like these little kids from like Spanish speaking kids in our house that didn't speak a word of English. We're like, oh, hola, you know, things like that. But how do you,
especially because like if we travel with some games and then we're like, do you want to play a game with us? And they're like, oh, yeah, sure. And then you kind of like can start a conversation from there.
I think it was hilarious. Like in southern Spain, they had this little girl from Madrid playing with them along the sea paseo, whatever you call it there, the walkway. And all of a sudden they were like setting up a market stand, selling stuff to tourists walking by. It was hilarious because I was like, who is this kid that they just met?
So funny, what games do you think are best for sort of cross languages if you don't know how to speak the language of the other child, what games can you play that can sort of cross over?
Usually it's like simple games that I think most people would understand, like sometimes whether it's chess, because sometimes you'll be in like certain countries and they'll actually have like a huge massive chess area that you can play with, or we'll be playing.
What about simple games like tag or hide and seek, or even just playing on a swing, pushing? Like Chloe will play with anyone, like a little kid and an old person. But yeah, what are some games that you play? I think just anything, right? Whatever you have access to. Like if it's a beach, well, it's sand toys, burying people in the sand.
Or whether we have a ball and play volleyball or really anything.
Yeah. Chloe, I see I've scrolled way down into your YouTubes and it looks like you were really sick in a foreign country 3 years ago. What happened there and where were you?
So we were in Ecuador at the time and we were kind of like they didn't have like a really big hospital where we were. It was only just a walk-in clinic. And the lady just thought I had dengue fever because it was common then and there was a lot of people getting it. So she was just giving me things that I needed for dengue fever, except the problem was I wasn't getting better and I just kept getting worse and worse. So finally, after a couple days, we were like,
I think we did like we, 4 days in and out of a walk-in clinic, getting her IV every night. It was like, it was awful.
We have to go to the big city, which was Quito. And there they had an actual big hospital. And it
the doctor was like, we need to airlift her there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, but we couldn't do that. We just took the next flight and got to the hospital like as fast as we could.
They realized that it didn't have dengue fever, it had a bacterial infection.
She was literally septic, and I forget the number, but it was like her whole blood was infected. They were talking about potential blood transfusion. It was freaking scary. It was the worst thing ever. And I think Chloe, you know, she was quite young then, and she's been, you could say, affected by it in the sense that, like, before COVID, she literally wouldn't touch anything with her hands. And I thought, oh my God, I thought she had OCD or something. Like, I was like, what is wrong with this kid? She was always washing her hands. This is pre-COVID, you know, when no one was doing this. Now it's just normal standard practice, you know, procedures, you know, you wash your hands for 20 seconds, you know, whatever it is. But she was like, we were in Dubai and then we were in Sri Lanka and she wasn't touching anything. Like, she wouldn't touch things on a bus. And I'm like, you have to hang on to the rail or you're going to go flying, you know, things like that. And she just wouldn't. And I was like, do I make her wear gloves? Like, what do I do to this child? Because she just, I think you've been a bit, you know, you could say traumatized in a sense. She doesn't want to get sick again like that. And then COVID came and I'm like, oh man, you're right. You know, good on you for not, you know, touching things.
So do they know how she got it?
They have no idea. They have no idea whatsoever. I mean, we were in an area that was, you know, very,
could have been from water or anything, really.
Yeah. We don't know.
When they ask you, you know, have you been traveling in the past 2 to 3 weeks? And you probably had been to 4 or 5 countries, right?
Right. I mean, wow. It was interesting because it was just like, let's just get her, like, you know, let's better. Just get her stable. Yeah. Yeah. So she was there for four or five nights, I think. And what was crazy about the whole thing is, like, my husband and the other two were also fighting a virus. So they were fevering at a hotel. And I was the only one just trying to stay afloat above everybody and not get sick. It was just terrible. So she had bacterial and a viral infection all at once. Oh, crazy, God. Yeah. So it can happen.
And so scary for you as a mom.
Oh, my gosh. So scary. And the same thing happened to us in Malawi, Africa, where all of us, we were so sick. And I just remember thinking in the middle of the night, like, are we going to make it? Like, I was, you know, you get these really crazy thoughts, like, oh my gosh, she's going to help me. And as a mom, you're like, if you're not good enough to, like, stand up and help everybody else, how are we going to just get better? Anyway, we dragged ourselves to the hospital and we just, like, plunked ourselves down. We're like, please give us some medicine. But it can happen, and is part of the travel that's, like, you know, you try to avoid that. And we've been doing really good. Like, since then, we've been doing amazing at not getting sick. You know, because we experienced it in Bolivia, we experienced it in Malawi and Ecuador. But since then, we do things differently. We travel with certain medicines and certain naturopathic kind of things that as soon as we have any sign, we, like, take it. And usually within, you know, a day or so, it clears up pretty fast. So knock on wood, you know. And then we sometimes try to go more vegetarian in some countries just because, you know, you just don't know if certain things. Yeah, you know. But yeah, I mean.
And you don't tend to try and, like, eat salad because you don't know if they've been washing it in water.
Yeah. The worst I did was just recently on our way before we came to New Zealand, I was eating these mangoes that we bought at the side of the road and I was like just loving it. And then all of a sudden Clay looks at me and she goes, ew, there's maggots. You're eating maggots, Mom. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't see them until after they started like coming out of the mango and I was like so disgusted. It was awful.
Chloe, did you get a picture for the videos?
Did we get a picture? I'm not sure if we got the reaction or whatever. Anyway, did we? I'll have to check. We haven't worked on those videos yet. Those are all coming up in the next few months. So, yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to see if the maggot mangoes make the video.
Oh, one last question before we move on. Yeah. Where are you going to be going once you leave New Zealand?
Ooh, that is a big question. And we keep asking, what's the exit plan? Because everything's still, like, so many countries are still shut down.
Because we came to New Zealand, we thought we'll also go to the Pacific Islands because we're so close. We were going to go see Fiji, Tonga, but right now it's all, like, locked down, I think. Right?
Yeah, and, like, we can get to certain places, but then we can't get back into New Zealand to get back out again. So it's really tricky. So And honestly, you know, with everything going on, it might look like we're going to pass through the Middle East and kind of make our way back towards Europe, but I'm not sure.
There is their basically stormy season, so we wouldn't really want to be going when they're having their hurricanes, right? Or stormy weather.
Yeah.
That's smart of you, Chloe. Are there any countries that the girls want to get back to? So, Chloe, is there any place that you would love to return to? Oh, Mom, Dad, why did we have to leave here so soon? I can't wait to get back there. And what do your sisters think about something like that, if you know?
Well, I definitely would love to go back to Nicaragua just because I really loved it there and we were always surfing and it was just really nice. As well, Mexico, because of the food and just the culture and the way of life there is really nice. And I also really liked Indonesia, Bali, that area. It was really mm-hmm. pretty.
And as where well, do you think I your mean, daughters want to get back to, Chantel, the others?
I think Spain, just because yes, of the Spain. Friends we met and we spent quite a bit of time there. So Southern Spain, I think they would definitely say yes to that. Switzerland, because it's home. Canada, because it's home. And then I think Mexico, probably Nicaragua would be high on the list. And New Zealand, once we leave, we'll be homesick for New Zealand for sure. Angelique's never been to Japan, but she's so stoked to go there. Let's think where else. Yeah,
How do you vote? Does everybody get a vote, or how do you decide, or is it based on sponsorship, or how does the decision get made?
Well, a lot of it's based on, so we have a big massive list of the different countries we want to get to and the different trips that we're planning. And so what we have as a plan is kind of like, right, we're trying to get to the countries we haven't been to yet, and then we'll go to the countries, you know, that we really enjoyed afterwards. So that is the overall goal with it. So it's based on usually Tyler's plans and like, okay, right, we're going to do this kind of future trip to Africa. And these are the countries that we could check off as we go through. So yeah, there's like 43 countries left in Africa to see, 9 in the Middle East, 10 in Central Asia, 5 in Southeast Asia, and then 15 in the Pacific and actually Southeast Asia. So there's still quite a few to hit off. So those are the goals, is to get to those countries before we get to go back to our fun ones that we love so much.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Question is, can we do it?
Well, let's move on to the next section of the show, which is we have a destination that we pick each week. It can be anywhere in the world. And I'll actually go first because it's a place that you could probably visit directly from New Zealand, because I flew to New Zealand from there, and it is the nation of Samoa. Mm. Samoa is one of my favorite countries in the world. It's one of the first places I actually visited. When I started traveling full-time, I actually went to the Pacific first. That was the first thing I did. I basically took 6 months to cross the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Samoa is a great place. When you go there, you're going to fly into the island of Upolu, and that's where Apia is, the capital, and what resorts and things will probably mostly be there. But I highly recommend taking the time to go to the second island, which is Savai'i. There's basically two main islands in the nation of Samoa. Savai'i is much more laid back. It's not as developed. But you can find some great, really locally village-run resorts there. It's been a while since I've been there, so I'm sure it's changed quite a bit. And also, I would take the 20-minute flight to American Samoa, to Pongo Pongo. And that'll be a very different experience. Culturally, it's Samoan. There's really no difference. It got split up, you know, 100 years ago. So you'll have family with, you know, people on either islands. But they've kind of evolved separately. Samoa is much closer to New Zealand and Australia. They play rugby. They're pretty good at it. In fact, they just change the side of the road they drive on to the left to align countries. And they also changed what side of the international dateline they were on. They used to be the westernmost country. It was the last place on Earth where the sun would set. And now they're the easternmost. So you actually have to change dates. And American Samoa is, as the name would suggest, much more American. They play American football. Pretty much most of the great football players you see in the U.S. or professional wrestlers all have families which hail from – American Samoa. A very, very fascinating place and really one of my favorite places in the world.
Wow.
Jen, what do you got for us this week?
Well, thinking about places I would like to travel back to, it's been a long time, but I love London. And there's so much that I haven't done in that area that if I think about if I could go back to a place that I've already been to and I could stay for a bit and I could travel sort of like you do, where every week you go to a new destination, I would like to really go back to London. And I traveled, well, we lived there for a year when Cora was little. She was two. And I would just like to do that again. And now that she's almost Chloe's age, I just think it would be nice. We have friends there, so if I had to stay a really long time, it feels like I could have that connection and community without having to start from scratch. And there's just lots of other countries that you could go to stemming off from there, plenty that I haven't been to before. So there's this nice blog from a local mom called Travel Mad Mum for parents who love to travel. And I really liked her list of the best things to do in London with kids. It wasn't super heavy on selling packages or tickets, which you can kind of see that with some of the other blogs. But she hit up some things that we really enjoyed while we were there, like the Natural History Museum. I also really like the Transportation Museum. The Maritime Museum she has on her list. She has places where kids can travel, can play on a sailboat. Lots of other things like watching the changing of the guard. I don't know how interested little kids would be in that. Maybe they would be, but there's so many parks. So many parks. And my favorite park was Clissold Park next to Stoke Newington, where there were lots of places to lunch and go visit a toy shop and just push a stroller around. So Clissold Park, I loved little petting zoo there, little ponds, lots of grass to play on. And yeah, travelmadmum.com, best things to do in London with kids.
Chantal, what destination do you recommend?
Well, because we're here in New Zealand, I'm going to have to say New Zealand. And because we've discovered it literally, as they say,
from the top to the bottom,
we have to pick New Zealand. And so we thought we can share with you maybe the area of Rotorua. So if you come to New Zealand, most people who are coming to this side of the world will often be like, Australia is so big, so I'm going to do 3 weeks in Australia and 1 week in New Zealand and then, you know, whatever they might do. But I honestly would strongly, strongly, strongly suggest if you're coming to New Zealand, make it like at least a 3 to 4 week trip, if you can. Because, first of all, it's so big and the road and the highways aren't what you expect. So their national highway is only two lanes, you know, one lane for one direction, one for the other. It's not like a four-lane highway or what we have in other countries, and it's very mountainous and there's just so much to see and experience. And it's so diverse in all the different areas that you don't want to kind of speed through it too fast. But if you were coming and you only had 1 week, let's say, then I would choose, if you could, well, I had two destinations, but I'm going to stick to Rotorua just because of the, you know, scenery and what you can experience. And so we have a whole bunch of videos coming out really soon, the next month, of our time there. But just some of the highlights would be they have like what they call the river jet boat tours, where they invented that in New Zealand, like these fast speed boats that go down rivers. And what's unique about it is that you see volcanic activity everywhere. Like the earth is literally steaming up all over the rocks. And then you can do this one tour where you go through these narrow rocks and you're literally sliding through volcanic, where the lava would have flown down, you know what I mean? And then you get to these amazing hot waterfalls from the volcanic warmth of the water coming down on you. So that's one of them. We also experience white water rafting, which is the largest drop that you can do in the world commercially. Like you can do it on your own, you know, but where they come and bring tours, and it's, I think, 7 feet, I think, drop. So it's a rapid and you go down like white water rafting.
7 meters.
Oh, 7 meters. 7 meters. Yeah. Sorry. Not feet. Yeah. Meters. So it's pretty high. And then there's things like
a buried village, or you can just, in general, there's volcanic activity wherever you go, and it'll typically smell like sulfur. which is like rotten egg smell, but that's all the sulfur and minerals flowing up from the ground, which is crazy.
Yeah, you can do these mud baths, which is like volcanic kind of mud, and then like put it all over your body. You could also do, there's this whole volcanic valley that have some of the wonders of the world that don't even exist anymore. So they have this, like,
it exploded.
Yeah. So it's like the pink, what do they call them? The pink
terraces.
There's
pink and white terraces, which were like these white and pink mineral baths that people would have swam in back then.
Yeah. It was literally a travel destination. People from the UK would take, you know, I don't know, however long boat trip to get here. And then they did these tours where they would bring you to these baths, these terraces, and people would go sit in the mineral waters way back in probably like, I don't know what year it was. I forget.
1890.
Yeah, it was like crazy to think of the journey that people would do. And anyhow, unfortunately, it all erupted and it's all now underground. But they do have kind of pictures of it that you can see. And like Chloe was saying, like the buried village, there's, you know, there's Pompeii, Italy, where you can go see where people literally had a whole village. But they have the same thing here in New Zealand, in Rotorua, where you can see homes that, you know, hotel that is all underground that was, you know, under, I don't know how many feet of ash and stuff like that from the volcanic eruptions. But it's a pretty cool area to experience, and a very unique experience at that.
Okay. And let's go to our final segment. This is our pick of the week. This could be anything, a book, a website, whatever. I'm going to start out by recommending GoodPods. So you may have heard of Goodreads, which is a site that allows you to share what you're reading with other people. GoodPods is the same thing, but for podcasts. And it's an app you can download on Google or iOS. And basically, you can see what it's a podcast discovery tool. And This Week in Travel is listed. And so is my other podcast, Everything Everywhere Daily. And you can tell people, you can leave reviews and share it with your friends. So goodpods.com.
Cool.
Jen, what do you got?
I have not mentioned this resource in years. And so I'm going to tell you about a family-friendly accommodations website called Kid and Co. That is spelled KIDANDCOE.com. And I just love the family-focused sort of design-centric homes and collections that this site has. So, you know, most families probably turn to Airbnb or HomeAway or something like that. At least families in the U.S. do. But Kid & Co. is this little gem that not that many people know about. And if you go to their collections page, you can see the homes that are categorized by coastal escapes, best for babies and toddlers, best for older kids, long-term stays, road trips, houses with pools, beach houses, best homes to homeschool. And so all of their homes are kid-friendly. And so you'll see kid amenities, and you'll see bunk beds, and you'll see houses that are sort of bigger because families need more space, and more people can stay in them. So I really love Kid & Co. And one of their newer things that they have is they have an exchange program. So I didn't know that till I went to go see it today. And what they do is, for, I think it's $99 a month, you can be part of their exchange program. Oh, sorry, $99 annual membership fee. You get access to their home exchange. So you exchange your home for many of the other homes that are an option. So I think that is fantastic. And yeah, kidandco.com. See if you like it.
That is awesome. Home exchange sites have been our saving grace for being in New Zealand this long. So that is awesome.
But do you have a home to trade?
Yeah, we do. We have a flat back in Switzerland that we trade, and you can trade with points. You can trade like simultaneously. We have people there right now that are on home exchange. So it's pretty cool.
Oh, great. Yeah. Well, I hope you like this one, because when you take a look at the homes that are available, they're just stunning. They're so nice.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited to check it out, because especially when you arrive to a place that's sterile, like an Airbnb, it's not the same as when you get there and they might have markers or just things like pen and paper or puzzles or games, like kid things, you know, which is really cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Chantel, do you have a pick for the week?
I sure do. So I was thinking and racking my brain around this one, and I thought of this one, and sometimes I don't like to tell people we use it, but we do. It's the best onward ticket site. And what it is oftentimes when you go to a country, you need your exit to leave the country or else they won't let you in. And sometimes we just don't know when our exit's going to be based on how long we want to stay somewhere. So we don't like to necessarily book the flights unless we have to. And so with this website, Best Onward Ticket, you can book a flight. They book it for you. It's legit. You get a PDF and you can show that to when you're coming in as your ticket. And essentially it gives you the ability to, you know, get in without having your exit ticket. So not something I often share, but there you go. That's a great one if you don't want to book your exit ticket right away.
I have been burned by that several times. I went into French Polynesia without an outward bound ticket, and they forced me to buy one on the spot, which was ridiculously priced. And then they said, oh, well, you can just cancel it the next day. And I was like, well, then what's the point if you know I'm going to cancel
Chantal?
It? But they made me do it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's wrap things up then. Jen, where can people find you online?
You can find me online on Twitter at Jen Leo and also at BitCuriousMom, where I am talking about all things crypto.
And we have now set up This Week in Travel to do value for value Bitcoin payments.
Really? Is that what you just sent me the other day?
Yeah, it doesn't mean it's easy to do, but it can be done. Like someone sent us 1,900 Satoshi, which is worth $1.50, I think. So
wait,
yeah.
Somebody already sent us something?
Yeah, I have no idea who. I think it's some of the people that are organizing the system. They just send a token amount to the first sites that are doing it. So there are now 1,000 podcasts in the world that are set up to do this.
And what's the name of the platform? It begins with an F.
It isn't one platform. That's the confusing thing. There are several different apps that let you do it. Sphinx Chat and Fountain is a brand new app for iOS that lets you do it. I couldn't tell you how to actually set it up right now.
I'm gonna test it out before our next episode.
All right. Leave an amount of Satoshi that is easy to identify, like some number or something.
777.
There you go. Chantel, where can people find you online?
All right. Everything Growing Up Without Borders on YouTube, Instagram, and our website. Make sure, check us out on all those different platforms.
Excellent. And you can find me, as always, at Everything Everywhere Daily Podcast. Learn something new every day. Podcast for intellectually curious people. And Chantel, you might actually know, I have a lot of people that kind of surprised me because I never intended this, who are listening to my podcast with their kids every day. Because it's a clean educational show and they'll like listen in the car when they drop their kids off to school or something. So
that is awesome.
Yeah, I actually am thinking of hitting up some like homeschooling groups to try to promote it.
Yeah, awesome.
So until next time, stay tuned for another episode of This Week in Travel.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts.